Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Hey, thanks for spending part of your day with me. The Public Theater continues its nearly 60-year tradition of free shows in Central Park. Because it's the public, there's an adventurous spirit around the productions, the desire to try something new with something old, like Shakespeare. Under the direction of Tony Award winner Kenny Leon. Hi, Kenny.
Hey.
This season, the play Much Ado About Nothing is set in the present day in the backyard of a Georgia home, which sports a huge Stacey Abrams 2020 banner. The show opens with Beatrice, played by Danielle Brooks. Hi, Danielle.
What's up?
He was nominated for a Tony for The Color Purple. She was so good.
Thank you.
Singing a Marvin Gaye song. Her love interest slash verbal sparring partner, Benedict, is played by Grantham Coleman. Hi, Grantham.
Hello.
You may have seen him off-Broadway in the production of Choir Boy. And by now, by those credits, you have probably deduced that the two leads are black. And so is the whole cast. A quick reminder of the story. Beatrice and Benedict are brought together not by Cupid's arrow, but by the trickery and gossip of friends and family. It's also trickery and lying that almost destroy another couple, Claudio and Hero. Tickets for Much Ado About Nothing is playing now, obviously, in Central Park, and they are playing through June 23rd. Kenny, Danielle, and Grantham are in studio. Thanks for coming in, y'all.
Thank you for having us.
All right, so Kenny, you pursued Danielle for this role.
Not long.
It didn't take it much.
Yeah, what was the pitch?
No, I just like, wow. I've always admired her talent, you know, and then to find out that she graduated Juilliard, I said, oh, wow, she has the chops too. Oh, wow. And I think she's a beautiful woman. And I think she, in terms of Hollywood standards, she does not a traditional beauty. She's a unique, specific, beautiful woman who is very talented. So I was like, and I didn't have a backup if she said no. So it's like, in terms of the concept that came up for the play, and then, you know, once she said yes, you know, very quickly, that was the, you know, that let us be off to the races and running, you know. But I think that she is a Beatrice, you know, and she's my idea of what Beatrice should look like, sound like, be like. And I'm so grateful and thankful that she said yes.
So you finished rap. You rapped Orange is the New Black.
Yes.
You had a movie opportunity, and you said
yes,
no.
And I turned it down.
I'm going to do this.
Yes. First of all, like, Kenny Leon is... Can I cuss on here? I don't know.
Not really.
Okay, he's the best.
Not really. You know what you meant. So it's good.
And actually, he low-key was hitting me on Twitter. He was like, yo, you going to do this? And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. But to me, it's sort of like what he's been able to do. It's like, what are you leaving the American theater? What's your legacy going to be? And I think he's created such a great legacy. He works with the top actors, black or white, or and all in between. And so for me, it's like, okay, I knew that this movie, it was a rom-com, would come again. And I wasn't even the lead of that, okay? I was not the romantic interest. And I knew for me, this was something that I would get to leave. Little black girls or anyone that even felt that they related to me would be able to say, oh, Danielle Brooks did that. I can do that. She's unique in herself. And she brought all of herself to this role. I've never seen that before. So it for me, it's like I wanted to leave people feeling, having a new narrative, you know, of what they think someone like me can only play or do, and say, actually, okay, I never thought this little chocolate girl from South Carolina, you know, who's plus size, size 16, could play Beatrice and be the love interest. So I got, like, all of what I wanted, maybe not the check, but all of what I wanted in one, so it made sense.
Now, Grantham, you've done Shakespeare in the Park before. You've been a part of it, right?
Yeah.
So where were you in your life that you thought, okay, I'm ready to do the lead? Because without, it's you and Danielle. Like, that's the center of the show. The show hangs on you guys and your chemistry. Where were you in your head that you said, yep, this is the time, I can do this?
Well, you're right, yeah. Like, being a understudy ensemble member 7 years ago, being trusted to carry a spear and make sure that got on and off stage, coming back to the park was really a dream. And I've been doing some Shakespeare plays over the last few years, and I got to be Hamlet, and I was like, all right, check that, that's it. What's next? And it's always been trying to get back to the park and trying to be a part of a production that means something. And lo and behold, we got both. So it's just a dream. It's a dream.
Kenny mentioned that you went to Juilliard, Danielle, but you did too, Grantham. What is something that you learned there that you get to use every night in this play?
Oh, there's so many things I feel like I've learned from Juilliard. I mean, one is being able to tackle the language, number one. Unfortunately, while I was at Juilliard, I didn't get many opportunities to do that on such a large scale. I was playing the spear holder, like Grant was. Like, I was witch number one. But we spent countless hours, you know, in rooms, getting either to watch my cast, you know, classmates, or working on the language and dissecting it. So just that alone is half the battle. And then just getting to work with somebody who already speaks a common language, going to the same school, it just was easy. Like, I don't feel like we had to, like, talk about trust and, you know, letting go or whatever. It's just like we were able to feed off of each other in a very natural, truthful way. That's all I got to say.
How about you, Grantham?
From school? Yeah, like the language, definitely, and taking these ideas and these complex thoughts that we normally don't speak that way. We speak very fragmented. We speak in the same monotone voice, and that just doesn't really rhyme with Shakespeare most of the time. So I think what I learned at school was that, like, it's okay to be a little heightened. It's okay to make a magical moment happen, and it's even more okay if it happens naturally. Like you were saying, like, this whole process, there hasn't been a time where it's like, man, I just don't know what Danielle's doing. It's been like, man, am I doing what Danielle's doing? I hope so. I hope I'm there with her, because it's been really easy. Mm-hmm. And it's always normally so hard. And I think that's what happens when the right people are working together.
Definitely.
You're riding the wave together.
Oh, mm-hmm. For sure.
So, Kenny, when you were approached to do this, did you always have it in your mind you were going to work with an all-black cast? Was that vision the thing?
No. Oscar, who's the artistic director at the
Eustace,
Public,
yeah.
Oscar Eustace, said, we want you to do Shakespeare in the Park. And we tried to work it out last year. My schedule couldn't accommodate it. And then he came back this year, and I was like, okay. And I said, which one? He says, well, there are 37 plays, I think, 37. And you can't do As You Like It, because that's next year. So you got 36, just pick one. And then I met with James Shapiro, who's this Shakespearean guru at Columbia. And we just sat down and went through the plays, and we start talking about the comedies and the political implication of the comedies, and start talking about Much Ado. What it's really about is about laughter and love, and protecting those values of love and laughter, even no matter how much the evil comes at us. And I said, oh, that sort of reminds me of what's happening in the world today. And then the first part of the play, it says, Shakespeare says they're coming from war. And it's like, what war? And I said, well, I start thinking about the Middle East. I start thinking about all over the world. And I was like, no, it's a war happening in America. And what if this war was next year? And once I started mm-hmm. thinking about that, then I got to the idea of Aragon, Italy, that's like Aragon, Georgia. There is an Aragon, Georgia. And once I discovered that, I was like, because that's where I live, in Georgia. And I just started building it around that, building it around the black middle class of Atlanta and that specific community. Mm-hmm. And then I started growing into more and more ideas of what the music would look like, what the humor would feel like. And I sort of stumbled on it. So I didn't do it because I wanted to say, oh, let's do a black production of Shakespeare, even though we don't see a lot of that. Mm-hmm. It just came from a natural place. You need to tell a story about a community, a specific community. And if you do that, you can land these universal themes that Shakespeare intended to be landed on the hearts of people. And that's how we did it. And once I started with Danielle, and then we went to Grantham, and then we built Chuck Cooper and Olivia Washington and Margaret Odette, that's what it looks like, and that's what it feels like. And I dare anybody to go through the play, white or black, and sit there and tell me at the end if you don't feel that this play is needed, and that it's about love and community and love of country. And if you make it to the end, you'll say, wow. And because we cast it this way, it helped the ideas become clearer, more clear to you. So it was actually a joyous time at the park, under the moon and stars, with black and white and gay and trans and all of us sitting together, looking like, thinking about how we can keep protecting those things that are valuable to any decent society.
My guests are Kenny Leon, Danielle Brooks, and Grantham Coleman. We're talking about Much Ado About Nothing, which is currently Free Shakespeare in the Park. Yeah, you give this very passionate, impassioned introduction It is, right? It makes me laugh. And you kind of, it's so funny because people pay attention. Usually the introduction is much more like, well, you're free, Shakespeare.
They've been clapping when he's
right.
Says it.
Oh, you're talking about the recording?
Yeah,
the
recording. It's quite passionate. When did you record that, and what was going through your mind when you did?
I don't know. A week ago, said, oh, could you do the pre-show? And I was like, sure, I'll do the pre-show announcement. And it's a page and a half. I said, this is long. I just want to get the play going. And then when I started thinking about it, I just started thinking about, well, what do I feel passionate about? Why do I love this play? So I try to put my love of the play and my love of this time in history, I try to put that into the introduction of the play. So when I say, welcome to Much Ado,
it gives me everything I need.
And I want to give that last bit of energy to the cast every night. And I won't be here every night to watch your show. So at least a little piece of me they'll hear before the play, and then it'll remind them to stay focused, mm-hmm. keep it real, stay in truth, have fun, you know, laugh and love.
When y'all were thinking about your characters, it's obviously the original text, but there is that sense that it's today, it's somebody's backyard, it's a barbecue, everybody's here. What did you want to infuse in Beatrice? Also kind of keeping gender roles and all the discussions we've had around gender roles lately.
All of myself is what I wanted to infuse, every bit of who I am, without holding back. And I think that happens a lot of the times because you see these old Elizabethan, Victorian-esque, you know, Shakespeare shows, which you don't understand half of. You know what I mean? But I was like, it's understandable. And that's what I've always liked, even in college. I was like, damn, if I could just get a chance to do this my way. Or the way I envision it, you know? And I finally have been given that chance with Beatrice to do that. So when I get text that's like, oh, Lord, he will hang upon him like a disease, I'm going to say it like my Southern self would. Oh, Lord, he will hang upon him like a disease. And it's written in prose anyway. Mm-hmm. So you have the freedom to do with the language as you want versus this very verse, you know, way of doing things. So it again, Shakespeare lends itself to being as rich and full of life as you want to make it. And luckily, Kenny has given us this opportunity to do so and have the freedom to do so. But yeah, I just wanted her to feel so relatable, and I wanted everyone to walk away feeling, and Kenny used to say this too, and I feel the same way. He was like, if my Uncle Leroy can't understand this, then, you know, we ain't doing it right. And that's how I feel. If my dad, who does not read Shakespeare, my mom, who doesn't read Shakespeare, I want them to be able to relate to this and walk away being like, yo, my daughter, I knew exactly. She was in love and she was talking mess with this man. Like, I want it to feel that way. And I think audiences are happy to walk away feeling a part of it and not feeling like they couldn't relate or understand it.
Grantham said, Benedict, your Benedict is super likable.
Oh,
you kind of like him. And I've seen other productions where he's a little bit coarser and like you're a little bit like, I don't know about that guy. Was that intentional? Did you want him to be a likable guy?
I think so. It's a happenstance of hopefully I'm a likable guy. And also just it is 2019 and in the play 2020. And it doesn't seem right to champion someone whose values don't meet or match that. Because we do deal with a lot of issues in the show. And I'm just hoping that the Benedict that people see represents the Benedict that I would want to be, that I would want to show a young black man that he's described as noble and honest and these things. And it wouldn't feel right to betray those opinions about him.
Kenny, was there anything that you changed? We had the actors from Kiss Me, Kate in, and there were a couple of lines that they changed of Petruchio. Like he calls Kate a pig, and then they said, we're not doing that. We're not doing that line. And they changed a line in one of the songs because it talked about how women were weak, and they changed it to people are weak. Was there anything that you changed or shifted in this that just because it felt appropriate for now?
There was one about skin tone at one point.
Yeah, I think one time we say instead of pale, we say dark, mm-hmm. like that. But for the most part, I wanted to keep the language as Shakespeare had it for. But I did cast a lot of several of the men roles, normally cast as men, I made them women. So like Dogberry is a mm-hmm. woman. And, you know, they refer to Dogberry in the play as like, he's a good fellow. And I was like, they said, should we change that? I said, no, let them call him fellow. So the meaning of it, the satire comes out if you let the language remain the same. Mm-hmm. And so now in our production, Dogbear seems like the smartest person in the room when he's dealing with three of these, you know, these kind of silly men. So we tried to, in the most part, keep the language the same. We took out the references to Messina because, you know, that sort of takes people back, oh, it's in Italy. So we took those out. But other than that, it's pretty much the same. Places where Shakespeare had songs, we made those songs new and contemporary. And so Jason Michael Webb does some new music for us. You know, and at the top, I added, you know, some flavor of contemporary music. And, you know, Danielle starts singing Marvin Gaye, What's Going On at the Top. And so not to give anything away, but so the use of music, language is the same.
It's also, there's a lot of physical comedy. It's including the audience.
Yeah.
I'm sort of curious, what kind of reactions have you gotten? Because Dan, you go in.
I know.
You're up the side. You're sitting on people's laps.
I was scared at first because I've never been active with an audience in that way. And Q was like, yeah, you're going to go out there. And I was like, oh, no, I wanted to map it out. I didn't know. And I saw Bryan Cranston do The Network where mm-hmm. he was all in the audience too. And I was like, I got to steal some of that. But one night, we finally got an audience for dress rehearsal. And I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And one night somebody got up and I was like, well, just sit in my lap because I don't know what to do. And I just kind of ran with it. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun to be physical. I've always like prided myself on being a actress that it tries to be as physical as I can in the show. And with, you know, the elements, you kind of have to be careful, you know, with it's raining sometimes and you have to be careful with not slipping, which Grant almost did once.
What happened? Like,
well, I was crawling and then I was running and then I was sliding and kind of life went before my eyes. And then I made it down the ramp. So it is on us to be careful and safe, but they keep us so safe if it does rain too hard. But yeah, it's so delightful to watch that scene.
And it started out as like, not as like a gimmick or a stunt. The thing was, you have these two scenes back to back. You have a scene right before that when Benedict is being, you know, sort of tricked by the men, and then followed by the women giving her fake news. So I was like, how can we make those scenes different? So one, if in Benedict's scene, he's upstage far from us, you know,
hiding in a bush,
eavesdropping on these men, and then so she has
dancing.
To be
so awesome.
She has to be in the audience for her thing. So it just made those two scenes just technically and visually different, so that the women wouldn't be a scene that's repeating what we just saw with the men.
What challenges did you have as a director directing outside in the elements? What did you have to keep in mind?
I don't think anything element wise. It's just like I just say, like, we are where we are. We are outside. So just play the truth of that. If it starts to sprinkle rain, you gotta play that. If the raccoon jumps on the stage, you gotta look at that and acknowledge that raccoon is there. Yeah.
I saw that happen during Taming of the Shrew. They did the all-female Taming of the Shrew. Oh,
yeah.
Little guy just waddled across the stage.
Wow.
Janet McTeer was a boss. She dealt with it.
So it's good. So one thing I like to say is, like, if you have some great actors on stage and a willing audience and you're sitting there and you're all breathing the same air, that's a beautiful thing, you know, breathing the same air together as this beautiful drama unfolds under the moon and stars. And so we're just finding truth and keeping it real.
I think last time you were here, I asked you this question about American Son, about the audience responding back.
Yeah.
And the conversation that you'd had with the actors about what to do because people like to talk. And has that been happening in the show so far?
Not to that extent, but one thing that is truly happening, when black folks and white folks sit next to each other, we rub up on each other. So we're different. And that's why I like the diversity of audiences. It creates something that's more exciting than just being with one specific culture. But one thing we said early on was, like, you know, the first act really should run about 1:30, and the second act runs like 40 minutes. So it's a good short evening of Shakespeare. But our first couple of previews, we were like 1:43, 1:45. I was like, no, the first act can't be that. It's like, let them in, let them laugh, but you got to cut through that laughter. You got to cut their laughter in half so they start learning how to respond to the show instead of like, oh, we're going to wait every time. And if we wait a minute for the laughter to calm down, that's not going to work. So we talked about that. Like, so in terms of getting that response, we want that response, but we got to drive the narrative, drive the story, stay ahead of them, make them chase Shakespeare. And if they chase us, they would feel like, oh, I don't know that. What do I want to know? I can find out. But if you slow down for them, now they will get bored sooner, quicker.
What response have you gotten from somebody either on the street or in the audience that you thought, this is good, it means I'm doing it right?
Oh man, I think I had a friend, she went to, I'll just say whatever. She went to Juilliard and she took about 10 years off from school because, you know, life happens. And she came to see the dress rehearsal and she was like, Danielle, you had me in tears just to see someone like you represent me. You gave me hope again to like do this thing. And that to me was like, that's the whole point of why I took the job. It's so that it could remind people like, yes, we can do this shit stuff too, you know? So that's been cool. And then also like it gives me so much joy when people like, when I leave and people are like, oh, Beatrice, like after we take our bow, like instead of calling me tasty, you know, like it's like, yes, I feel, yes, that's all I need.
Well, I saw a 13-year-old, she was great, a 13-year-old kid in the audience, and I spotted her and she spoke. And I said, I want to get your notes at the end. She said, me? I said, yeah. So I came back to her at the end. I said, what are your notes? She says, Mr. Leon, I loved it. I understood everything. And in school, we see all the Shakespeare, but it's like it happens like in the 14th century. And they're saying wherewithal, without, and I don't understand what's going on. She says, I understood everything about this play. And I was like, that's great. So then another time, I was hiding in the audience with my hoodie on my head. So nobody knew I was there. And I heard this older white woman, maybe she's like 75, and she stood up and spoke to a group of 20 that she was with. She says, now that's how you do Shakespeare.
Yes!
And I was like, yes, that's fuel. That's motivation for me.
Yes.
That's how you do Shakespeare.
My guests have been Kenny Leon, Danielle Brooks, and Grantham Coleman. They're in Much Ado About Nothing in Shakespeare in the Park. Thanks for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
This is all of it on WNYC. Stick around. We have the filmmakers behind the documentary about Halston.